Hey, what's going on, Cinemare Attackers? Welcome back to another episode of Cinemare Attack. That's right, everybody. And before I get into the cast tonight, I was going to say one thing. It's hammer time. Oh, yeah. That's right, everybody. Hammer show finally here. And we have a full crew tonight. First up, we have the man, the myth, the legend, the creature feature teacher, Matt. What's going on, man? It's been a while, man.
Yes, it has. It's been a long time. What's up?
This the usual. I had to actually rewatch a few of the movies today because it's been a while since I watched them, you know? So I wanted to get them fresh in my head, that type of deal. But overall, been good. Plus, I've been keeping busy, you know? But we'll talk about a little bit more about that in a little bit. Let me just introduce the other half of this. The return of the infamous producer extreme, the man who is the Eric Lassaw afro from Coming to America, Dubby Doubles. What's going on, man?
What's up, man? Yeah, it's been too long, man. Glad we're back.
Yeah, we missed you, Dub. Hope everything's all right. Personal family issues came about. That's why the show was pushed back, but I hope everything's all right with you and your family now, and hope everybody was all right during that situation.
I do appreciate it, man. All's well, man.
I hear you. A little side note, I was actually recording yesterday with a certain man who's been infamous on a few shows now of the 22 Shots of Moods and Horror. He's actually my co-host of No More Room in Hell also. Been infamous for during one of the What We Watch segments of 22 Shots, falling asleep during the mythical Moods' review of one of his movies, because Moods has that soothing voice. He should be like, he's like a Canadian rapper version of Barry White. He's like, hey, what's going on, everybody? This is my review. Listen to it now. And I know this for a fact because I fell asleep to Moods talking and doing like a top 100 list during Skype, which everyone thinks it was a podcast, but it was actually before I started podcasting when that happened. It was just a random fun night at Skype when that happened. Just putting that out there, Jeremy Freeman. Calling you out, motherfucker. But, we have Mike Merriman here. Mike, what's going on, man?
What's up, Derek? What's up, fellas? Glad to be here. It's first time on this show. Heard a lot about it. Heard the show. I'm glad to be here.
Well, technically, you were on a commentary with us before.
Oh, that's right. I don't know. You guys... I know some shows, like, their commentaries are, like, almost like a side cast, but yours is just considered all one, I guess.
Yeah, we just do them in the side in case, like, you know, we're just thinking of show ideas and, you know, trying to process what movies we want to do for certain shows. Be like, we need to get a content out there still. So he's like, let's just do a commentary in the meantime while we're trying to figure out certain movies we want to do. And, you know, if we need to get the movies and stuff like that, that type of deal.
Yeah. Commentaries are definitely the easiest way to like get some episodes in the backlog just in case.
For sure. And this is actually a very exciting... Well, if you guys didn't know this, this is actually the brand new debut episode of us on a new network. I actually posted the Del Toro show on there, so it's in the new feed. Once I get the... I'm trying to find out the RS feed, but if you look for it through your Google players, it's going to be this bright red new Cinema Attack logo created by the homie James Kausk. It's pretty nice. We actually had a few different color variations, which we might be saving in the future because I have some ideas to use those in the future for some other smaller projects, which big ups to James for creating a new podcast images for both Cinema Attack and Celluloid Dissections, which is on its own feed now. It's going to be a very interesting experiment, but, you know, at least we could cover certain movies now, and we don't have to worry about, like, say, like, I know W wanted to do the Big Lebowski one week, and then I was like, Carly picked that on, you know, so we could actually do other movies and I could actually watch them, put them on this show too now. So that's always good in the hood. I just didn't want to like ransack it because sometimes both shows were released the same week and it kind of hurt in that aspect too, because which one do you listen to first? You know, but but I think it was a good time for to do that. And, you know, I was kind of bouncing ideas from the time when I actually decided to do that. And, you know, I'm like, yeah, let's just make a new feed. And I wanted to do it anyways, you know, just to get it out there. And, you know, I didn't want both shows competing for which one you guys listened to that week. You still do that, but, you know, some subscribers would listen to one show and the others ones would listen to the other. Who knows, you know what I mean? But, so I just wanted to make it a little bit easier. Once I find out a little bit more information how to get, like, the feeds and show you which the images look like, just look for those feeds and add in, which means also you're going to have to do some reviews for us, fellas. So once we get started, leave some reviews, but, you know, all the old episodes will be joining that feed in the meantime. But big shout-out to Philip Perron and the Dark Discussions Network for giving us all a new home. And, you know, it's awesome in that sense.
Maybe have another contest.
For sounds sure. Fun. Contests are always fun, man. I love contests. I love, I actually entered one the other day on another podcast. I'm like, and, you know, it was funny because the co-host of that show, Rachel, was like, I wish I could enter this. I'm like, I know you're feeling. Because, you know, when W, that last prize that W ran, you know, it was like, oh, you know, I think Dylan won that too.
Yeah, hell yeah. Of course, it had to be Canada for that one. Or no.
I bet it's a lot worse than it was then, though, now.
Oh, yeah, you know what? I love international shipping.
Yeah, especially during these times. but anyways, what have you guys been up to besides... Dub, did you do anything fun, at least, while we were extended for a while?
Yeah, man, I actually got out and got to see some local parks and shit, so it was nice to actually get out of quarantine. I mean, that's a side note. You know, of course, everything's been closed. But yeah, man, just hanging out, you know, doing the quarantine, working from home, and fucking watching movies, that kind of shit.
What about you, Matt? What have you been up to, man?
Actually, my wife and I just went to a diamond mine not that far down the road where you actually go out digging in the quarry, breaking some rocks, trying to find some diamonds and quartz and all that shit.
Get some geodes.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. Didn't find much shit, but it was a lot of work. I was like, I was exhausted within a couple hours. Bashing rocks all day.
Yeah. Actually, I might have been also to blame for why the show is kind of extended, because I forgot I was actually going to Maine one of the weeks, you know, and I didn't come back till that Saturday night, and, you know, I was like, oh, God, I didn't get a chance to watch the movies because no internet, no Blu-ray players, you know. It was like, you know, I would have if I could have, you guys, you know that. But I had fun. Maine was pretty fun, and, you know, it's a lot different there than it is around here. There's a lot more freedom. There's still people, there's people wearing masks and stuff, but, you know, it's like a little bit more like they're kind of relaxed about it because, like, I guess it's not as bad up there from what I'm hearing. But, you know, they keep a good precaution too and stuff, like the, like certain stores I went to that only like a certain occupancy could come into it. Like 15 people in some stores, like the Bull Moose I went to, only a certain amount of people could come in at a time.
Yeah, there's a couple stores in the, like a mall near me. They actually have lines set up. There's actually a person front gating it saying, you know, X amount of people can come in. Less have to wait outside until everything goes by, which is fine by me. As long as you're keeping everybody safe, fuck it. I can wait a line to get into a store.
Yeah, yeah, I don't mind it either, you know. It's just, it's interesting because it's actually the first time I went to, like, stores in a while. Like, certain stores, you know, like, Bull Moose was actually a very interesting experience because I always ordered offline from Bull Moose. Actually going to a Bull Moose store is very overwhelming.
Did it take you a long time to actually get your product?
I was actually looking at the horror section for like maybe a half an hour.
Oh, wow.
That was that big, and it was a DVD horror section and a Blu-ray horror section.
Nice. Like drooling. Like, what do I want?
You know, and I ended up taking up like two things, but you know, I had like 10 things in my hand at once. You know, I was like, I didn't want to be like crazy because my mom was with me too. I'm like, she's gonna kill me if she sees me buying all this shit. So like, I'll just buy like these two things and just, you know, I could always order more offline. The cool thing is, since I have like a account with them. You know how they do like the rewards points?
Yep.
They could do it at the actual store too. You could actually just—they just ask for your name and they just put your points on your account. You know, so it was pretty cool in that aspect. And you know, I went to the beach. I'm not really a beach guy, but I actually enjoyed the beach there because you know it was kind of especially when we went during like early morning, nice and hot. Especially in that last Friday we went, the waves were nuts.
Well, today I actually went, there's a family video near me, and I found out they were closing, so I decided to take a gander over there to see if I could find anything good, at least. I did find a few movies, but nothing, ooh, I gotta have, or ooh, that's out of print type deal, but it's kind of sad to say goodbye to another video store chain, even though video stores are next to none. But still, one still around, it's kind of nice to go in and actually, you know, either visit, shop and rent and all that, but another one bites the dust.
Yeah, that sucks. You know, it's weird. I definitely was crazy because Family Video, like, I don't even have one around here, you know? So I was like, wow, you know, they were doing so good for so long, but this thing kind of killed them.
Yeah, I think COVID got them good.
Yeah, but Bull Moose kind of handled it a little bit better. In my opinion, with the aspect of they still delivered, they did delivery still with their online store, which I think kept them around, and they did curbside pickups.
Yeah, Soundgarden near me did well, too. They closed for a while, then they said, okay, you can come in, but you had to have your order ready. I mean, you had to know what you want, and they'll go get it.
Mm-hmm.
Then they said, you know, we'll just allow X amount of people in, keep your distance. And they just gradually progressed to allow more and more people in, and that helped them out big time. Like, they have two stores, one in Syracuse, and the other one is in Ohio, I think. So they stayed up afloat pretty good, and I'm glad they did.
Yeah, sure. You know, we got to keep these, like, little chains alive.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'll order from Bull Moose, like, all of their certain other companies if I have to sometimes.
Oh, when their sales hit, boom, I'm on Bull Moose picking shit up left and right on their sales.
Yeah, I even pick up some new stuff sometimes too, though, just to keep them in check if it's like a $20 Severin.
Oh, yeah.
I'll pick it.
And there's just something about buying something in the wild, though.
Yes.
You know, it's all about that hunt and
actually seeing it right there on the shelf going,
it in your cart, you know. Takes all the fun out of it.
Mike, I know you actually cut down on collect. You still pick up a few things here and there, but I know you cut down because kids. Is that correct?
I mean, not kids in general. It's just, I mean, in my 20s, you know, I would be that guy that was like at Best Buy or Fry's or Amazon like every Tuesday, buy new releases, and I built like up a pretty good collection at the time, and then just over the years, it's like, you start looking back at all the stuff you bought, and you're like, I have never touched this since I've even owned it. I don't even have desires to watch most of this stuff. So I just kind of slowed down. I'm just more picky about what I buy, but, I mean, video stores, yeah, they're pretty obsolete here as well. I think every once in a while I might drive. You know, when you're driving, you might see, like, a mom and pop open, but that's far and few between. Now most of my buying of movies specifically will be at like local conventions that I go to when they have vendors and like, I'll just scour them to see, like, okay, what can I find here that's not available? And there's some really cool stuff, you know, at conventions. So that's kind of where I do most of my movie buying now. But even then, you know, I've kind of shied away from just collecting in bulk. Because I see, like, you know, Derek, obviously you, and Moods, and JP, just a lot of people. It's like, when I see you guys buying stuff, it reminds me, like, when I used to. And sometimes I'm tempted to just be like, oh, I like that movie, I want to buy it. But I don't know, man. My collecting days, for the most part, are over. The most recent thing I did buy, I just picked up the, I think it's Shout Factory, the Halloween 3 Blu-ray.
It's been released. I know it's one of your favorite movies, too, though.
Yeah, I really like it. It's probably, like, my second favorite in the Halloween franchise.
It's my first favorite.
Really? That's cool.
Yeah, I have some very opinionated things to say about Carpenter's Halloween, but we'll save that for another show. Well, I still give it a good grade and stuff. It's just not one of my favorites, and, you know, it's just... Okay. It's a little side rant here. Earlier in the movie, we see he already has the mask when Laurie's at school.
Mm-hmm.
Then when Laurie's driving with a brown hair chick's name, not PJ Souls, the other chick.
Yeah, I know who Linda, I think it is, right?
Yeah, Linda, yeah. And they're driving.
Cop's daughter.
The cop's daughter, and they drive by when they're smoking pot, and you hear, like,
speed kills or whatever.
Yeah, and then there's a robbery at the hardware store, and they stole a Halloween mask, a rope, a knife, and, you know, it's like, wait a minute, this hardware store has been robbed since whenever this morning? You know, and it's been going off, and they're just getting there now?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess they gotta fire the script supervisor, whoever's job that is.
You know, it's just that one aspect of the movie which I have to always point out to people. Like, look, you know, even movies I give 10 out of 10, I still nitpick, and, you know, some of my top 10s, I'll still be able to... I won't be biased towards them if there's something I see wrong with them. You know, like, it's goofy, but, you know, it's, like, still 10 out of 10. I don't give a fuck, you know? These ratings are fucking stupid anyways in my book. It's whatever. It's all about enjoyment for me half the time.
That's true. It's hard to put it on a box, and, you know, you feel different each time you watch it sometimes with films, too.
And, yeah, you know, and that's the whole point. Like, at the end of the day, like, we'll say, like, some shit in some episodes, like, you know, the one episode, Matt's, like, Under the Shadow, I didn't like it. I'm like, best movie ever, you know, it doesn't matter. Who gives a fuck, you know? It's everybody's taste. If we all like the same things at the end of the day, this would be fucking boring as all hell.
Right, and then down the road, I could watch that same movie again and be like, wow, this movie is great. What was I thinking back at the time? So, opinion always changes.
It can always happen, you know? Or, you know, like, actually, Venom actually had a conversation like this about Prince of Darkness. Actually, last night, Mike, if you remember.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And, you know, great stuff there. And, you know, it's always fun, that aspect. And I always like that aspect of this shows and doing the shows I do. Which, I actually been a podcast whore lately, guys. Have you guys noticed?
You? No.
No, we've heard rumblings.
You know, of course, the infamous 19-1 show is out now on all media platforms. And that was Mike's daughter in the background, definitely. Shout out to, which one was that, Lydia or the other one?
Judging by the high-pitched part, it's probably Priscilla.
Priscilla, awesome stuff. But, yeah, it was on the 91 show. It's out there. Judge it on your own. I say a lot of F-bombs during it. What else is new? I also guest starred on a kind of big podcast that I listen to. And, you know, I actually donated to their Patreon, and, you know, the host Henry is not kind of, some of the perks involve mailing stuff, and he's not comfortable with mailing stuff at this time period. So what he's doing instead is giving everyone their own episode. to be a part of. It came from the Monster Movie Podcast, which is a very interesting podcast in the sense because Henry actually, a lot of his guests don't even watch monster movies. They're like people that he gets like a different perspective of the movie from like people that he knows from all over. Like, very interesting aspect of that show, which, you know, and they actually rates on different scales. Like, he'll rate on like story, like out of 5. Characters out of 5, creature concept out of 5, design execution out of 5, and then enjoyment out of 5. And, you know, actually, the enjoyment part's actually funny because he actually also rates out of a negative 5 skill. You have to listen to it. It's kind of funny. But that was a fun. We did Sector 7, which is a movie Matt actually told me about. And I wanted to rewatch it for some reason. I was thinking of a movie, and, you know, like, yeah, Sector 7. It's a movie I haven't seen in a while, and I wanted to revisit it. And, you know, they give, like, a letter grade at the end. I'm not sure when that episode's out, so I don't want to actually give away the final grade of that movie. So but once it's out, I'll be sharing it around. It was a fun time. I had fun.
Well, that's the thing I feel like I would like to be on, especially talking about monster films.
Yeah, it's actually a fun concept, too. Yeah, you definitely... actually, if you want to, Matt, you could even get a show for, like, the dollar Patreon level. You could just donate a dollar and you get your own episode and you get guests on it. You know?
Sounds cool.
Yeah, so that's a good aspect of it. It's fine with that, and it's actually cool that he's doing that instead of, you know...
Yeah.
You know, it's fun. And plus, he does, like, he's actually a Tea Public curator, so he actually does a lot of, like, Tea Public cross merchandise where he supports artists and gets different artists onto like his Tee Public page just so they get money for their support, which is cool. I like Tee Public for that. They actually pay the artists for their art.
Cool.
Yeah, and that's about it. You know, plus No More Room in Hell just recorded. Actually, we did an awesome werewolf episode. That didn't we? We did Bad Moon and Weir.
Weir with Brian and Jamie Sammons as guests. So yeah, fun episode. Good to get it out. Good to have finally have like our first episode in what, the last 3 that didn't get pushed back.
You know, yeah, it's actually fun. We're actually on like a wave. We're actually recording again in like a few weeks.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what the original tension was, like bi-weekly if possible, but just, you know, between 3 hosts with going on, it's hard to always have a tight schedule. You know, we're not young anymore. We all got commitments outside, so
it is what it is. Plus, Venom has like 35 podcasts.
Yeah, that's true.
He's like, I can't watch all these movies in one day.
Yep.
He's a funny dude sometimes. What's it else? That's about it for me, you know. Others actually have a few guest spots lined up. Just getting the line out there, you know. That's what I'm trying to do, especially since we're on a new network. Got to get ourselves out there. You know, always good with that sense. Broadcasting live. Oh, yeah. Awesome stuff there. But, Mike, did you realize we actually were going to watch a werewolf movie today?
Yeah, I did find that interesting that, like, by coincidence, 2 days in a row, I'm talking some werewolves.
You know, but, yeah, we're doing Hammer Horror, or Hammer Film Studios, whatever you want to call it. One of my favorite studios of all time for horror. I love Hammer Films. I love their crisp, gothic nature, especially with the old school stuff. A lot of, like, the first, like, Dracula and Frankensteins I ever seen were Hammer. Before even the Universals, which is, you know, what's your history with Hammer, Dub?
Yeah, man, that's another one. I didn't have an early exposure to him, unfortunately, but it was, you know, when I started getting more hardcore into horror and stuff and went back and watched all these classic Hammer horrors, especially anything Christopher Lee and Peter Cushing, always a good time. You know, it was cool to see kind of a revival of the 30s, like you said, gothic horror kind of coming back. Yeah, man, I'm a huge fan of them. You know, they always think of the hammer blood, the hammer color. That's what I always just like almost instantly associate when I hear hammer.
Oh, yeah, you know, actually, this is weird because I actually didn't know this was a Hammer movie when I saw it. You know what the first Hammer movie I saw was?
What's that?
1 million years BC with Raquel Welch.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
And you know that one's awesome because it has Ray Harryhausen special effects. So, and yeah, they actually did a kind of like a pseudo sequel called When Dinosaurs Rule the Earth. You know, cave women.
With big tits.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, you know, it's crazy how many different genres they did. You know, even if you look back to like the early days when they did like the Quatermass films, like the early 50s sci-fi films that actually influenced John Carpenter in a lot of his later day 80s films like The Thing, Prince of Darkness, and The Mouth of Madness. The Quatermass films are very influential in John Carpenter's films in those genres. Yeah, it's just crazy how many films we could actually done, the directors we could talk about that were part of like the early days of Hammer, like Terrence Fisher, who we're going to be talking about in a few minutes, Freddie Francis, George Baker. Actually, ironically enough, the guy who actually ran and produced a lot of the Hammer movies, Michael Karras, actually directed the second feature we're going to be talking about tonight, who's actually the guy who created Hammer. So that's going to be interesting. And, you know, in the 70s when they were starting, like, kind of like the end of like their heyday of like the early, late Hammer, you get to see like a lot of different directors come in, including one that actually went on to do some great movies, which we're going to be talking about at the end of the show. And I'll be mentioning those movies when I do that, because that's actually the movie I picked. But yeah, Matt, what about you, man? What do you think about Hammer?
It was weird. I was always into Universal at the time. Never got big into Hammer, but then I realized later on, I started watching more films and going, wow, these are awesome. What are these? Like, I never heard of this type of Dracula or seen this type of mummy film, and I heard about Hammer. And I didn't know much about it until I started doing more research. And I freaking love it. I was like, wow, this is pretty badass shit. I never even heard of half of these movies, and realizing I even know most of them were Hammer or not. I kept getting them confused with other things.
Yeah. You know, you have like a lot of similar films coming out, like from the Italians during the time period too. You know, they're doing their vampire movies with like the Riccardo Freda I Vampire came out around the same time as I think Horror of Dracula did. It's very interesting in that aspect how much Euro horror ruled during that time period, and it soared. It was great in that sense, and it's great to think that, because Hammer, without Hammer, I wouldn't love a lot of the Euro horror that I love today. It's very influential, and you know, ironically enough, me and Mike actually did a show on No More Room in Hell where we talked about the Bloodthirsty trilogy. Did you guys ever hear of those films?
Bloodthirsty trilogy? No, I don't think I'm aware of that one.
Arrow put them out as like a release. It's the three vampire films. They're Japanese Toho films that are influenced by Hammer.
Okay, I have that set, but I don't know anything about it.
Mike, tell Matt to watch those right now.
Yeah, I like all three of them. I mean, there's a clear favorite of the trilogy of mine, but I just like the kind of, you know, the Japanese take on the Hammer horror film. It's, you know, if you're familiar with Hammer films at all, they're going to have a familiar feel to them, but they still have a little bit of their own flavor to them as well. And just the way they craft the stories in them, I think, is really good. So I would highly recommend checking them out.
Cool.
Yeah, it's a great set, and you know, it kept me interested in. That'd be actually a fun show to do for us sometime, you know. But
we should definitely do it.
Yeah, write it down in the books. You know, I don't mind doing them again because I love them. You know, Mike knows that from if you heard that show. But I'll be able to talk with you guys with them too. You know, I always love introducing. You know, I'm a man whore. I like talking about movies I love. Fuck it. You know. But, yeah, you know, it was weird when we were actually doing this and we were trying to pick, like, the movies. I'm like, damn, should I pick this one? You know, I was like,
because a lot of options for sure.
You know, it could always lead to Hammer Volume 2, and, you know, and then we, like, and there's another company that I was actually competing with Hammer at the time called Amicus, which actually had a lot of the same actors, so it was kind of confusing which movies you had to actually look it up sometimes. Like,
is this because I was asking you too. Was that an Amicus or is that a Hammer one?
And it's weird in that sense too, because, you know, like, even like when Hammer was doing, like, you know, those dinosaur movies I mentioned, Amicus was also doing like those Doug McClure movies, The Land That Time Forgotten, The People That Time Forgot, you know. And At the Earth's Core, you know, which I love all those movies too. We might actually do a Doug McClure show one day, guys. I'm just telling you right now. I love Doug McClure so much. Dubby, you should be Doug McClure of the show from now
on. Doug McClure.
But anyways, I think I'm blabbering enough. It's so much fun. But before we go, Mike, what's your history with Hammer?
I have, like, a scattered history. Like, I obviously know what Hammer films are. I've seen a good amount, but I am by no means a connoisseur of them. The movies we watched tonight, it was a first-time watch for all of them for me. And through the course of discussing them, I'll probably get into, like, the reason I like certain aspects of these ones. Over just general Hammer, it's kind of hard to, like, get into it before we actually talk about the movies, because people
like,
what the hell is he talking about? But there's certain, let's say we've all probably seen enough Hammer films to know the general way they work and how they're crafted. Yeah. But there's certain ones that they just do little different things that kind of set them apart or have them stand. Like, they kind of catch my eyes more than just a general Hammer film. So, we'll see if any of these did that. And, yeah, I'm excited to talk about them. But, yeah, I would say it's just a general novice history when it comes to Hammer as a genre.
Stop Hammer time. Anyways, I think we should just get right into it. So we'll be right back, and we're going to play you the trailer for Dubby's pick of the night, The Curse of the Werewolf. And we'll be right back after this.
The Curse of the Werewolf, that was laid on a baby who grew into a man possessed by a monster. This Spanish town, the night brought drinking and dancing, music and girls, and the moon. The full moon that turned an innocent man into a savage beast. The Curse of the Werewolf. A man possessed by a desperate need for love, who found in Christina all the passionate sincerity of youth.
Christina, do you love me? Will you marry me, Christina?
You say you love me, will you marry me?
Yes. Yes, I will.
Help. Help me.
Get away, get away! Get away!
What is up, y'all? We are back for some Hammer Tom, first movie of the night. And this is from 1961, directed by Terrence Fisher, who we've talked about is pretty well known and done quite a few other Hammer films especially. There's a lot of my history with him, but let's see, what has he done? That Revenge of Frankenstein, he did a lot of the classic Universal remakes, basically the Hammer composed, but this is one of his earlier ones, and this is 1961 there again. You also have Oliver Reed starring in this one. He's pretty much your main protagonist in this. And he plays a young man growing up in 18th century Spain. And basically it follows his tropes of his curse of the werewolf. And it just follows his life and the general going-ons of this small village. So this is one I picked. I basically just wanted to revisit. I'm a huge fan of all the Dracula, Christopher Lees and stuff, but I hadn't watched these in a long time as far as Curse of the Werewolf or their Dr. Jekyll remake, stuff like that. I've just been kind of wanting to revisit, so that's kind of the main reason I picked on this one. But what's your guys' general thoughts? Can have Mike, the guest, go first.
Yeah, Mike.
All right. So, yeah, I like this movie. It was fun. One of the things that stood out to me was I really liked some of the characters at the beginning. I was actually kind of sad that a couple of them left kind of at the end of the first act because I was getting a kick out of them. Like, it opens up with that dinner scene and, man, just the guy in charge. I can't remember like his official name, like of what he is. But is it?
The I think his character is Sinistro.
Marquis Sinistro, just a downright jerk. But it's kind of one of those things where, like, man, if I ever encountered a guy like that in real life, you'd be pissed. But watching it on the screen, it's kind of funny, just the way he's treating that beggar guy. So, I mean, it's a pretty long extended scene to open up the movie, but it just establishes some characters. I liked him, and I liked the beggar character, kind of to open up our movie and set things up. But from there, yeah, I liked the design of the werewolf. What I thought when we finally got around to the werewolf scene at the end of the movie, it kind of almost feels like the werewolf, or I guess it's more of a wolf man in this one. I'm sure everyone's seen Monster Squad. The Wolfman and Monster Squad almost seems like it's designed after this one, because it's like the same ripped white shirt, the little ears on the top of the head, and I'm sure like Monster Squad took like a ensemble from a bunch of different Wolfman characters, but that's the first thing that popped in my head when we finally fully saw him realized on screen. But overall, yeah, I had fun with this one. For, like I said, first time. All these ones were first time watches for me. I tend to like werewolf, wolfman movies in general anyway. So obviously, as soon as you see the title of this, you're like, well, unless they're really trying to trick you, yeah, there's going to be a werewolf in it. And I had a blast with it. 90 minutes. That's pretty typical. You're in and out. And yeah. I guess I'll leave it at that for now, since it's just general thoughts. But yeah, I had fun with this one.
Yeah, I remember seeing this. I think I watched this way too young as a kid, because there's a weird, creepy rape scene that comes out of nowhere in like the middle of the beginning of the movie. Like, what the fuck? You know?
Yeah, that beggar, man.
He knew this girl since she was a little girl, and he's like, I'm gonna, you know, like,
she's legal now, all right.
You know,
he rapes her and dies. He's like, damn.
He's like, he came, you know. You know, it feels, the thing aspect of this I kind of like is they treat, like, the werewolfism in this movie, or the lycanthrope, as, like, the Incredible Hulk. You know, like, he has to be calm and good, you know, and, you know, maybe, like, you leave a good life and, you know, not have any sin in his life and, you know, be loved. You know, he has to be cherished to keep the beast at ease. And I kind of like that aspect of this one, which we don't really get to see in a lot of, like, werewolf movies. And that says it. And it's kind of weird how it came from, like, this weird rape this child was born of that made him a werewolf.
Yeah, and it was on Christmas Day, too. I always thought that was kind of wild.
You know, the aspect, it has, like, that religious aspect of it, which is kind of odd. Like, the werewolf's, like, the spawn of Satan in that sense. And, you know,
yeah, the Damien wolf.
You know, and, you know, it's weird. We actually, Oliver Reed's, like, second build, but he doesn't come until, like, 40 minutes in the movie because, you know, we get to see, like, a young Oliver Reed who actually, they found a great kid actor to play, like, young Oliver Reed in this. You know, and so a weird aspect, I like how it's like set in like a Spanish area where everyone's like Spanish, you know, like this, you know, he's Alder Reed's half Spanish in this, but the bigger character was like British, of course. And I kind of, that weird aspect of it, I kind of like too, like gives it a different flavor than you see in like a normal Hammer movie. But yeah, I have fun with it. I enjoyed it for it. You know, maybe a little bit more werewolf action. That's the only thing. I wish there was maybe a little bit more werewolf. But I like Oliver Reed enough, and I like the suspense building, because you know, like, you know, oh, he's fine now, but wait till he starts to fall in love with Butterface later, you know. you know, so that aspect of it, I'm like, oh, no. You know, but when it is there, I like it. I like the look of the werewolf. You know, Oliver Reed, I wish he had more lines in the movie, too, because I could listen to Oliver Reed do monologues all day, because he's like a white Barry White, you know? He's like, hey, how you doing? You know? But overall, I still enjoy this movie for what it is, but, you know, it's a good setup movie. Hammer didn't really do a lot of werewolf movies after this. It's an interesting take on it, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, did they do any more werewolf?
Not that I know of.
Yeah, that's what I can say.
They did a shitload of terrible mummy movies.
Yeah.
A lot of Frankenstein films, a lot of vampire films.
That's my least favorite Universal films, too, really, is the mummy films.
Yeah.
So that's kind of weird. But yeah, man, what's your thoughts, Matt?
It's definitely a different take on a werewolf film. We're used to either getting someone bit by a werewolf, or some kind of wolf, or a curse. We have a kid born on Christmas Day who is the subject of a rape, which I thought was really interesting. But also, too, is you feel very sorry for the beggar in the beginning of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
He's just coming into town, just wants food, he wants drink, coin. The master of this facility is like being a complete dick, and the girl's like, I'll buy him, Dad. He is mine now. You can't do him. We can't do anything, blah, blah, blah. She's like, he's like, all right, fine. Throw your ass in the dungeon now. There's your toy. And also, he's pretty much sat in there to rot, which you kind of feel sorry for the guy. All he wanted to do was have some food and drink. Being at the wrong place at the wrong time, pretty much.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you see the little girl. She befriends him. Then later on, his bestial tendencies come out near the end. He's been locked in this basement for the rest of his life. No one to talk to because she's mute, so therefore no communication or anything. Then all of a sudden he just kind of reverts to being a beast. Maybe that's where we get the whole kind of like a werewolf style. Uh-huh. Since now he rapes her, being all beastie and everything. And when she survives and escapes, she gives birth and dies. This starts a catalyst for some kind of new type of werewolf being born, which I thought was kind of cool. I did want more werewolf, too. The werewolf looked awesome. I thought a different look with the clothing and the white hair. We don't see a lot of white hair werewolves, so I thought that was really cool. And the whole scene where he's on the tower, he's got to climb the bell tower area to take him out, that was a really cool setting. I really enjoyed that as well. So yeah, I just wish there was more werewolf to it. But overall, this was a great film.
Throwing those barrels of hay on fire was like a pretty cool thing. Just when they hit and everything goes up in flames, I thought that was a nice sequence.
You know what kept me interested enough to make up for the werewolf though was the I liked all like the side characters too, like in the town, like the Peppy character that was hunting the wolf earlier on, and then left his wife, you know,
the Don Fernando,
that one drunk guy. He's like he's his friend. He gets attacked. You're like, oh no, not him.
You know, Juan or Jose. Yeah, I can't remember his name, but yeah, he was funny.
When he was partying with the girls.
Oh yeah, it's Jose Medea or something.
There were some fun characters throughout it. You know, that kept you interested at least, which says a lot when there's not a lot of werewolf. You know.
Yeah, and this is one that really goes in the mythos, and it's almost a character study of the Curse of a Werewolf, which I think is definitely a plus. The only downfall, like I said, I have to agree. I mean, I just wanted more werewolf at the end of the day. It's just too late in the movie. They could have given us a little more sneak peek at least earlier, but...
Yeah, for sure, you know. Even, like, I wanted to see a little kid white werewolf. That would have helped.
Right.
You know, we did see some hints
of shadow casting or something, man. Like, that's what I'm saying. They could give us a little something, but... Like I said, I understand it's more of a character study, I feel like.
Yeah, it's weird that, because... You know, you get, like, the tragedy of the parents of the werewolf, and you get the tragedy of the werewolf itself, which is another aspect of the movie I always liked. It's weird. It's a weird one.
There's a lot of people just being at the wrong spot at the wrong time, too. Like, when he was arrested, that poor old guy was in there just, you know, he did something wrong, and, oh, you're dead now. Watches him transform in front of his eyes. He's like, oh, shit, pretty much.
Yeah, you know, like Terrence Fisher's direction's always great. If the way I would compare Terrence Fisher, he's like the Ishiro Honda for Hammer.
And always great set design with his stuff. Like, really, you know, well used the colors and stuff, too.
For sure, you know, like, he directed some of me and Matt's favorites, Island of Terror. And, you know, like, that whole island set... We should do that as, like, an island horror show, that one. That would be a fucking good show.
That'd be cool.
Write that one down.
You know, we're going to think of some island horror movies, and I think I know the perfect guest for that. Because I know somebody who loves some island horror, but we'll leave that off here. We always think of shows when we talk about movies. Yeah. But, you know, it's always funny.
That's how it's born, man.
You know? And it's always great in that aspect where... It's just a great, you know, like we said, there is things to nitpick about the movie, but the movie is still great because of the characterizations that are in it. They're fun. You get a lot of fun characters twinkled into this dark and sad tale at the end of the day. And you like that aspect of it. Even, like, I kind of laughed when I saw how I wouldn't want to eat that goose either, the way that cook brought it out.
That thing was definitely freaky.
Like, it was still feathered, wasn't it? Like, who the hell are you supposed to eat that?
The face was all fucked up looking, and like, nope.
Pick it
up. You scare my wife. You go away now.
Pick it up. That was Mike's favorite character, that guy. He messaged me right away, like, what an asshole.
Yeah, I know. It just kept going on. And I do agree, like, I can't remember who brought it up, but about the beggar, how, like, at first you kind of felt sorry for him. You're like, you see it kind of like the friendship developing. He's like, oh, he's just a beggar down on his hard times. He's so, he has so much gratitude when he gets, like, the leftover food and stuff. And then, like, a few scenes later, it's like, okay, something's different about this guy. And then we get what we get to set up. The rest of the movie is like, oh, okay, I guess that script flipped there.
Yeah, it's a strange movie, and, you know, it's in the aspect, if you're a fan of werewolf movies, I still say I do recommend this one for, like, hardcore werewolf fans because of the differences it tells of, like, the mythology. It's a cool take. And, you know, I like the guy who actually raises him, too. That's another character I really like. I like the struggle where he has to finally do what he was dreading to do the whole time. And he goes up like a boss and fucking shoots him in the chest.
Like, he knew what he has been coming. So he was definitely planning it. Hopefully, what could be stopped. He knew what his duty was.
Yeah, and he knew he didn't want to do it. You could tell, and he felt bad after, you know, when he's putting his cloak over his body. Dude, he raised him as a son.
Yep.
And it's always that tragic story of the Wolfman that we always love.
Yeah.
I think a lot of Hammer horror often carries on the traditions of the Universal monsters, where there is some type of humanity and tragedy behind the monsters to begin with, or as we find out, you know, as the story unfolds. So that's something that carries over in this genre, which is pretty neat.
Well, we're going to be talking about later on my favorite character in a movie ever, and probably one of the best performances by this actor in that movie. And he just does a scene where it's one of my favorite scenes ever, and he's like a boss in it. But we'll get to that in a minute. But, yeah, that's all I got to say about it. It's, you know, it's pretty standard. It's standard Hammer. That's the only problem with it. You know, it follows the Hammer. It sets up the characters, and then it goes on, you know. It's a breeze, like an hour and a half. You know, it's pretty, it's a great story, though. And if you love Oliver Reed, I love it.
Yeah, definitely with you, Tom. Mm-hmm. Well, do we want to get into ratings?
Yeah. You guys ready for that?
Sure thing.
Yeah, final thoughts and ratings. I'll pick on our guest yet again. Mike. Maybe?
Maybe, Michael?
Yeah, as soon as I unmute myself, yeah. You guys do it out of 10, right?
We do. It's 22 shot style.
Let's see. As a first-time watch, it's always hard to, like, be absolute about your rating, but I'm going to go with a 7. I liked it a lot. I think my main issue probably with the movie is I feel like the middle of it lulled possibly a little, just because I thought it started so interesting with the characters, and then it's kind of after the scene where the beggar, does what he does to the woman, and after that, the movie kind of slows down, but then it picks up like at the end, and but I still was entertained by it. I definitely want to revisit it, you know, pick up on things I didn't get on an initial view. So I'll give this a 7 as a first time watch.
Nice.
Definitely fair.
Cool.
Derek.
Yeah, I enjoy the film. You know, the story is pretty standard for Hammer. In that sense, it's just, you know, this is from their heyday of their classic stuff. It follows the Hammer formula to a T. But I love werewolves. You know, in that aspect, you know, like I said, I do wish there was a little bit more werewolf in the movie. But overall, still a great film. It has some great set design. I love the, like, change of settings and stuff like that. Great cinematography throughout it, too. The film, the Blu-ray, if you get this Blu-ray from fucking Screen Factory, that shit is fucking mint. You know, it's like the best the film has ever looked. I was kind of blown away by the transfer of this, you know. And, you know, it has a lot of, like, sleaze. It has, like, early sleaze. We'll get into, like, you know, it's not just hinted in. Where if we get into, like, my film from the 70s, it would just be showing it, you know, in that sense. So you get, like, see the change of Hammer through these movies, too, which I kind of like. How we picked all three different, from different eras in that aspect. But I still enjoy it. And plus, Oliver Reed, one of my favorite actors. I actually blew him on the 91 show recently. With the Pin and the Pendulum. If you haven't heard that show, fucking awesome movie, too. And Oliver Reed's was he's a treasure, and I miss that dude. So I'm gonna give it an 8 out of 10. I do enjoy it. 8 is a pretty fair. Like I said, it's not going to be a bona fide 10 because I need more werewolf. But it's still a great movie, in my opinion.
Definitely. And Matt.
Again, yeah, I agree with everybody here, especially that we need more werewolf. But we get a really good story, and we get a cool, like, almost an origin story of this werewolf and how it became. And again, it's not your typical werewolf. It's not the whole getting bit by another wolf somewhere, or there was a werewolf that gets killed but gets bit and carries on it. It's basically born from sin, pretty much, if you think about it.
Yeah.
And this is how it occurs. The kid's trying to live a normal life, and he's got these tendencies where he needs to go out and eat animals, and then all of a sudden starts attacking people. But again, we don't get a lot of it. It's weird because it gets to the end. We get all the werewolf and all the action and everything happening. The rest of the movie is kind of like a big long origin story. But I liked it. I thought it was pretty cool. Again, I do have that Scream Factory Blu-ray, and it looks amazing how Scream Factory did the Blu-ray with some special features that I did enjoy and I did watch. There were some historian interviews, and I learned a lot from it. I thought that was pretty cool. Overall, I'd give this one a probably about a 7.5 out of 10. Again, I just wish it had more werewolf. It felt rushed with the werewolf. Like, we had this big, long story, then, all right, I want to throw a werewolf in here. It's not going to be long, and that's it. But again, yeah, but I still enjoyed it.
Good stuff.
Nice. Yeah, man, this is definitely one that, I mean, it has some cult following and is definitely important as far as werewolf films go. The Howling, you had a character actually named Terry Fisher. Mm-hmm. What else was there? American Werewolf in London. He actually asked her if she ever saw the Wolfman, and she replied, "Is that the one with Oliver Reed?"
Yeah.
So that's kind of fucking cool. You know, most people would definitely reference Lon Chaney. But yeah, anyways, man, I've highly enjoyed this one. I mean, looking back on it, I'd have to agree that it does have some lulls in it. We need more action in werewolves. I mean, that's definitely the unanimous thought on this one. But as far as you get great performances everywhere. You know, we talk about The Beggar. That's another guy that's been in a lot of other Terrence Fisher films too. I've always enjoyed him when he shows up. But yeah, I'm coming about right in the middle, you guys. I'm like 7.5 on this one. Solid werewolf flick.
Nice. Dope shit. Now we're going to go into something completely different. That's right, Matt?
Oh, we're going with my pick. Oh, boy. Yep.
Oh, yeah. Different. Totally different. And a little fact. A little fact. I actually kind of want to read the book to this movie, but we'll get into that a little bit more later. But, yeah, we'll be right back after the trailer, and we'll get into Matt's pick of the night, The Lost Continent. So we'll be right back.
Here, where a million years are but a moment. Here, where the present and the past tremble in the presence of the prehistoric. From here comes an adventure so big that only the big screen can do it justice.
What is it?
The Lost Continent, discovered in all its monstrous horror.
Never come across anything like that before.
A living hell that time forgot.
What's the matter?
This is the man who brought them to the Lost Continent to face the terrors of the past.
Save them!
Leave us!
The Lost Women on the Lost Continent. Her past drove her here.
Didn't they expect me to leave with nothing?
Her future begins here. Oh, hey! His life could end here. Now the horrors from the past meet headlong with the terrors of the future.
I'll miss because it's dry. But at one drop of water, touch it.
You will see torture pits for forbidden lovers. Barbaric sacrifice. monster we attack helpless beauty. Seed. Giant mollusks. See them fight to the death. Seaman struggle to destroy the evil of the lost continent. From the novel Uncharted Seas by Dennis Wheatley.
Look out on the starboard side!
A living hell that time forgot on the lost continent.
Okay, guys, we are back. I hope you enjoyed that trailer for The Lost Continent from 1968. This is actually a movie based on a book from 1938. And we have this awesome film here. Basically, the captain and crew and passengers of an old freighter, all of them with dark secrets, to keep find themselves adrift in a mysterious land full of monsters, conquistadors, and killer seaweed. Oh, yeah.
Especially killer seaweed.
Oh, there's a lot of weird shit going on in this movie. I did not know this was even a Hammer flick until I was looking stuff up to pick. I'm going, wait, this is a Hammer film? Holy shit. Completely obscured from, you know, your Dracula, Wolfman, Frankenstein ones. This one is... it's out there. Let's give you that. Let's get some else to talk. Hey, W, you want to go first?
Sure thing, man. Yeah, man, this is actually the only one that's a first-time watch for me out of the three films tonight. And I'd say it was a pretty fun time, man. Just overall crazy adventure flick and not what I was, there again, expecting from Hammer off the bat. Yeah, man. Like I said, there's a lot going on in this. You go from swashbuckling, then you kind of goes into some tentacled seaweed that's carnivorous, and I mean, it's a wild time.
There's a lot of weird ass monsters in this. Yeah, like giant octopus and crab monsters, seaweed, and
can't leave out that. We'll talk about that when we get there. But
oh yeah. Oh, yeah. Derek, what do you think?
This is actually a first time watch. Well, technically second time watch because, you know, we planned the show. You know, but I watched it again. And, well, the first time I watched it, I was like, what the fuck is this James Bond with the fucking music?
Yeah.
It had like its own like theme song. And it's like, you know what it kind of reminded me of? Did you guys ever see The Last Dinosaur?
Oh, yeah.
It reminded me kind of that song.
But, Last Dinosaur.
Now, I do dig this movie. I do have one issue with it.
What's that?
It shows the end at the beginning.
Oh, yeah, I hate when movies do that.
It wasn't a troubled... you know, it wasn't as used back then, probably. Right. But... you know, that aspect of it, I'm like, wait a minute. But it was cool that they didn't notice who died, but on the second time watch, I heard this child, I'm like, oh, so a kid died. I'm like, you know, in that sense. And you're like, I fucking hate that part of the movie. But overall, it's like, pretty much it's like a soap opera on a boat for most of the movie. And then it turns into like this weird, like, sci-fi adventure movie where they end up at the Lost Continent, where you have killer seaweed, giant scorpion fighting a giant crab monster. Fun characters in this one. There's a lot of, like, weird characters that you would... like, the chick with the blonde hair who's, like, has daddy issues. She's funny. Because she's just trying to get a man. She's, like, sleeping around the ship. You have the German lady just trying to get away from the weird... Jerry Carroll's looking dude, you know, like, there's some weird, like, spy shit going on, and you got, Michael Ripper as the first mate trying to do mutiny on the ship. You know, it gets crazy. My favorite character, though, is the fucking the piano man, who's, as we first see him, he's a raging alcoholic. Then an event happens in the movie, and he becomes the hero, like one of the heroes of the movie. He becomes like one of the main heroes.
So it happens when you sober up.
You know? it's weird. You know, that guy's been in some weird movies too. He was like in Beware the Brethren. There's a lot of recognizable faces. I just can't think of what other movies I've seen him in besides like Michael Ripper. But this was fun. This is a fun, like, weird movie that Hammer did, like, after The Devil Rides Out, which is actually ironic because the book that you were mentioning is from the same author as The Devil Rides Out, Dennis Wheatley.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually makes an appearance in the movie because the doctor character is reading it, which is kind of funny, too. Uncharted sees before he gets eaten by a shark, of course. You know,
we get some killer shark scenes in here, too. You get a lot of shit going on.
You know, and it just ends with the Spanish Inquisition. It's like, what? What? You know, it's fucking crazy. This movie is wild, and it has, like, Boobs McGee, as Debbie calls her, with her balloon shoulder pads. They have the weird
got some life preservers on her chest.
You know, she had balloons on her chest and balloons on her shoulders. You know?
Man, those scenes with the balloon was just cracking me up, though, when they're shooting down those guys and coming up in balloons.
You know what's funny? Isn't it funny when you see the one dude falling in the with the... Huh?
Yep.
Yeah.
You got the giant moon shoes on. Remember those moon boots back in the day?
Yeah.
They got those style. I can understand because they have to walk on the killer seaweed, so yeah. The balloons help them keep them up, so if they fall forward, the balloons will... like kind of set you back up, and the shoes are more of like a counterweight thing to actually move on the ground.
Uh-huh.
Still, they look odd walking. They're like trying to walk on
little mini trampolines.
Yeah, it's fucking funny. Oh my god, this movie's wild. And I gotta think of like, this is so much going on. You know, like even the characters are all kind of scummy people. Like the captain's, like got this high explosive on his fucking ship. It's fucking wild. You know, even like everyone's like has their out for themselves in this movie, which is it's kind of
the only one that wasn't was the chef, the cook, and he gets it.
Oh yeah, that guy's funny when he finds him later. And the bartender too. The bartender's pretty funny too. Like he just stays on the ship and gets shit faced.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, whatever. And they realize they get off the boat. And this little dinghy thing, and all of a sudden, here's the boat's back with the drunk bartender. He's like, "Hey, everybody!"
Yeah, he's like, "Fuck it, I'm getting drunk. Everyone's gone.
I'm blown up. All right."
Yeah, but I enjoyed it for a first time watch. It was fun.
Nice. Hey, Mike, what do you think?
All right. Also, first time watch for me. Yeah, this movie was a pretty fun one. I like movies like this where, you know, obviously it's going to draw in people with that synopsis thinking, you know, let's see some sea creatures, monsters, and of course that killer seaweed. But then you're also, as the movie's going through, you're realizing, man, the people themselves are almost as big a problem for themselves as the monsters are. I like the way the story was crafted. I like where things went. I like that. We had some pretty interesting looking creature designs in this. I got a kick out of the practical effects. Those monsters probably took a while to build. And by today's standards, I guess, yeah, they look primitive. But, hey, the movie's from 1968. What are you going to do watching it through the lens of today? But, man, yeah, this was a fun movie. I had never even heard of this. So, obviously, it's a first-time watch. But, man, one of the reasons I love being a guest on shows is because there's movies like I would never even think to watch, you know, without it being required for the show.
Or if it's a Derek pick.
Yeah, Derek picks are often ones that end up first-time watches, too. So I'm pretty used to that by now. My other sidecast theme warriors, Doug Tilly, does a lot of that, too. First time watches, but I had fun with this one as well. Another solid movie watched for the show, Lost Continent. I recommend it to people.
Nice.
Yeah, It's a blast. See,
I grew up watching this one. I saw this one when I was a kid. It was on one of those weird TV networks. And the thing that got me was, of course, the right off the bat was the... When I turned on the TV, there was a guy on the island with the crab monster and the scorpion. I'm like, ooh, what is this?
Of course, yeah, I would not doubt that this movie or many like it were on the TV screen when I was growing up because, you know, one thing that I was fortunate was my, you know, my dad was kind of like a, well, not was, he's still alive, but he watched a lot of different films. Like, it could be anything from, like, a Godzilla movie on to Shaw Brothers stuff to horror movies. Just growing up, and I had no really comprehension of what the hell all this stuff was because it's just a lot to take in as a kid. Mm-hmm. But there's just a lot of diverse stuff on. And a movie like this, while I could not, you know, by memory pinpoint this specific movie being on, it definitely gave me memories of, like, oh, man, this is, like, the type of stuff, like, that was on the TV when I was growing up. And, like, my dad might have me come in and watch it with him for 20 minutes, and then being a kid, I'm like, all right, now I'm going to go play Nintendo. But, yeah. So, yeah, like I said, I had fun with this one.
Now, I remember I was looking for the disc, and, of course, I think it was Twilight Times put it out, and, of course, it was out of print and could never find it. I found a convention bootleg. I was so excited, like, oh, I finally had this movie. Watch it again, all the must stuff that I missed, and loved it ever since again. And thanks to, I think, Scream Factory, re-released again on Blu-ray. And of course, I fucking bought that day one, because I knew I needed to have this movie in my collection. And the Blu-ray looks great. I highly recommend buying this movie if you guys haven't seen it. Yeah, some of it's kind of cheesy, but it's just a fun flick, especially if you like monsters or you like swashbuckling. And there's a lot of other weird shit going on, but it all works because they're on this lost continent where it's made out of old boats, almost like a boat graveyard. And there's a reason why there's all these other monsters around, because that's where they live, is on this hidden, uncharted island, pretty much. And they call it the Lost Continent because that's what technically it is. It works. I thought it was good.
Yeah, it's interesting one. You know, I don't really hear a lot of people talk about this one. You know, like we said, Mike never heard of it until he did the show. You know, that aspect. I actually seen reviews of this movie before, like Brandon Tellion on, you know, YouTube. He did actually did a full length review of this before it actually had, like, a, you know, a good release here, and, you know, in that aspect, and it's definitely a trip. You gotta hear us out, guys. If you do want, it might be a little bit better if you guys do know some of the aspects of the movie going into it, because you don't know what you're gonna expect, and you're like, what the fuck, and then this ends with, like, the Spanish Inquisition. It's like that bad joke on SNL.
Now, I think there's another movie called The Lost Continent, too, but that was from the 1950s. So if you look at it, you want the 1968 one.
Yeah, maybe. Those titles always blend together. Lost World, Lost Continent,
mm-hmm.
At the Earth's Core, Journey to the Center of the Earth. You know.
There's a lot of weird.
You know.
So let's get into some ratings on this bad boy. Dub, how would you go first?
All right, man. So, yeah, just first up, it's cool to just see a really different location and overall feel for a Hammer film. I'm used to more of the gothic stuff, the more traditional villages and castles. And so, you know, it's cool to see a lot more, like, sea settings and, you know, this kind of lost area, this remote island, and like I said, this is a cool, different adventure, especially see Hammer's take on it. I thought it was a little slow going. I know it was still setting up characters, you know, kind of giving you backstory of what's going on and their issues. But once their ship begins to have issues and they start bringing in with the fog and the great atmosphere, man, it really sets up for just a fun adventure movie. I'm going a 7 out of 10. Definitely recommend this one.
Cool. All right, Derek?
Yeah, I dug it too. You know, the aspect of it I didn't like was, like I stated at the beginning going to the end, but, you know, it was of the time period where that wasn't really a used thing back then. And a lot of other movies convolutedly did it a lot more. So I can't blame it on that. It's just a technique that maybe was new back then, but looking at it in today's eyes, you're like, oh, okay. So that guy that with the afro didn't live. You know, like, you know, you look at all the characters that are not at that scene in the beginning, you're like, oh, that guy's not there. It's like watching Ghost of Mars again. You know, it's like, all these people are going to die in Ghost of Mars. That's one of the reasons why I hate that fucking movie. You know, but overall, it's still a fun ride either way, you know, besides that point. I really enjoyed it. It does get a little bit soap opera for you because you got, like, all the characters backstabbing each other and, you know, interacting with each other within it. And I do get that. You're getting character development, though, which, you know, it could hurt the film and it could be good for a film in some aspects. But overall, once they get to there, though, all solid gold. It just gets wild and, you know, it's the Spanish Inquisition, fucking Monty Python style. Of course, the French fucking thought of that. So, I'm going to give it a 7.5. I really enjoyed it for a first-time watch. Plus, I want to have that theme song in my iPod.
There you go. Mike?
Yeah, I think 7's about the right spot for me as well. I think this movie has a little bit of everything for everyone. And if you're watching and you're like, I want to get to the monster, just wait. they're coming and they're creative and they're fun, well designed. And, you know, I would say, I think this is also a movie that probably gets better on a second watch too, just because if you go into it like just looking for like nonstop monsters, then you might be disappointed, but I think there's just so much more going on that running it back a second time, you just get all the good stuff from the characters, some zany stuff going on that ship. So that's just a big as part of the movie as the monsters are. And of course that killer seaweed is just awesome. Like, can you imagine like actually running into seaweed like that? But yeah, I'm going to go with a 7. Recommended highly.
Nice. And since I'm probably the only one here that's seen it multiple times, it does get better. Once you understand what's going on, like the more viewings, it gives you that little bit of a build up. Like it's a little bit of a slow, okay, here's all the characters, and all of a sudden, blammo, we're on this island. There's monsters everywhere. And you're like, ooh, all right. So you give yourself a little wait time, because you get all the character introductions, because there's a whole bunch of them. After that, get to the fun. Like, it's this weird giant octopus creature thing that attacks. You get the interesting story with the conquistadors, because there is this child who is the leader of this cult-like group there. So now you have this cult-like group who are very religious, who are very, you know, they got to go in and steal everybody, kill everybody else because they want to stay alive. They got to survive. And they're brutal because the high inquisitor or whatever the hell he is, he's kind of like, you know, brainwashing the kid.
He's a Klansman.
Yeah, kind of feeding people to this thing in a bottom crate that's pretty fucked up too. It's like more type of seaweed probably. But once you get all that going, it's a fun ride. It's a good time. Definitely has a lot of replay value, and I give this one a 8 out of 10.
Now, quick question. Do you think that seaweed in the pit that they throw him in, does that remind you of the Sarlacc pit?
It also reminded me of, too, was Barbarella.
It's funny you should say this, because the guy who wrote this movie wrote Barbarella.
Yeah.
Mike Nash.
Because there's the one scene in Barbarella where they throw the one girl into this pit, And it's pretty much a similar version of The Lost Continent here.
That's actually funny, because that's actually, I was watching the Kim Newman interview, and he was like, yeah, the guy who wrote Barbarella wrote this movie. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
It makes so much more sense now.
Dude just likes pits.
Yeah, like that thing in the pit. So if you like Barbarella, you're probably going to like this movie, too. Nothing like Barbarella, that's for damn sure, but...
Barbarella's a whole... that could be like a 10-hour podcast on its own.
Oh, God.
Every scene of that movie is like crazy, you know? But good pick, Matt.
Thank you.
Good stuff. But now it's time to get into the sleazy years of Hammer. Sleazy and dark times. And I'll be back with my pick with 1971's Twins of Evil. Oh, yeah.
Oh, God. Have mercy on this poor, unfortunate creature.
In old Gothic Europe, they had two burning passions. Witch hunting and devil worship.
Practice the black arts. They worship the devil. They're all slaves to Count Karnstein, and he is their evil master.
Do you know what I want more than anything else? To meet Count Karnstein.
They look alike. They dress alike. Two identical beauties. But one of them has the very devil in her.
For you, all pleasure should be supreme.
These are the men they call the Brotherhood.
Seek out the devil worshippers! By burning there!
And this is the sister, who is about to enter the Devilhood.
Look, what do you see? We are the undead, immortal.
The devil has sent me. Twins of evil.
You will be Maria now, unsuspected, good and kind. Think of the havoc you can cause.
I thought it was your sister that I loved. But now... I know. Maria.
Twins of evil.
And we are back, everyone, with the final movie of the night. I don't usually, you know, it's weird. Every show we do, I get the final movie now. I don't really want to choose it that way. It's just the way it works out sometimes. It's weird in that aspect, but hey, whatever. We all picked our own Hammer movies, and mine was the later year, so I lucked out. But, yeah, I picked Twins of Evil from 1971, which... Now, these movies are not connected, but this is actually the third in, like, the Karnstein trilogy. They're, like, different stories, but they involve, like, the name Karnstein, and they're part of, like, the Carmilla story, or as McCullough, as she's called in this movie later on. But, yeah, pretty much they're, like, the Karnstein trilogy, like, the vampire lovers... Lust of the Vampire in this film are considered like a trilogy involving like the Karnsteins, but they're all different stories and they don't have any like continuity or anything like that. So you can watch them all as like on their own. So that's good at least, you know, but, yeah, Twins of Evil. Wow. This synopsis is long. A religious sect led by Gustav Well hunts all women suspected of witchcraft, killing a number of innocent victims. Young Katie, Gustav's niece, will involve herself in a devilish cult and become an instrument of justice in the region. Yeah, kind of, but that's what happened. The way I would describe this movie, it's Witchfinder General with vampires.
Definitely good call on that.
Now, this director of this movie, do you know this director, John Hoag?
Sounds familiar.
He's directed a lot of movies that we probably have seen and loved, actually. He's the director of The Legend of Hill House.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
The Witch Mountain movies that Disney made, Escape and Return.
Cool.
The Incubus.
Wow, it goes right to the...
what else did he direct? Dirty Mary, Crazy Larry. The exploitation classic with Peter Fonda.
American Gothic.
American Gothic he directed.
Love that one.
He directed a Howling sequel, Howling 4. The original Nightmare. he's done a lot of things, and you know, but he's probably most known for like The Legend of Hill House and stuff like that. But this one also has a very interesting cast of characters. Like you have, of course, Hammer icon himself, Peter Cushing, in this movie, and probably one of his most sinister roles.
Definitely.
And he's like fucking brutal in this movie. But the interesting aspect of this movie is, of course, the movie's titled Twins of Evil, and it actually stars real twins, Playboy Playmates, the Collison sisters, as Maria and Frida. Maria is the nice one. Frida is the bad one. It's weird in that, you know, you could just, and it's weird because you could tell which one's the bad one because she's kind of hotter because she's sluttier. Makes sense. Especially when she's all bad and vampiric and, you know, she's wearing like her little Bond outfit later. And you're like, ooh, yeah. And, you know, you got Dennis Price in this. You get some Hammer regulars. But you also get an early role for an actor who's in a lot of my favorite Italian horror movies of all time. And that is David Werbach, who plays Anton in this movie. Who's in Lucio Fulci's The Beyond, The Black Cat. Numerous Italian movies. Ratman. I love Ratman.
How could you forget that?
Ratman's awesome. You know what its tagline is? The critter from the shitter. But anyways, yeah, David Werbach, you know, he was the zombie killer in The Beyond at the end with Katerina McCall. He's the dude in that movie. But it's very interesting because we actually get to hear his actual voice in this movie because he's dubbed over in that one, of course, because it's supposed to be New Orleans in The Beyond. But yeah, I like how it starts off with like Peter Cushing just burning people and killing women. It's fucking like crazy. You know, you get the two twins in the town and, you know, one of them's attracted to the mysterious Karnstein, who Peter Cushing's like, nope, fuck that dude. And then it turns into a vampire movie. And it gets the setup going. And I like the aspect of the twins in this one. I always did. And, you know, this is during that period because Hammer is trying to do something new and exciting because they were, even like Kim Newman and like the documentary I was watching before we started recording, they started to do all the Frankensteins and all the Draculas, and they're just doing sequel after sequel, and it's kind of the same shit. They're like, what can we do to spice it up? And they're like, let's add sex to the movies. And that's like, I'm like, I'm okay with that, you know? But let's get it off with Mike first, because Mike's the first time watch for you, and, you know, what did you think of this one, Mike?
I had fun with this one. This is kind of right up my alley. Like, when it comes to Hammer horror, this is probably, like, what I've seen the most of these types of movies. I looked up the twins on IMDb, like, before we started recording, to see what their profile was, and I find it hilarious that if you click on both the actresses, like, either one of them, their profile starts out with strikingly busty. Oh, Michael, that's the first thing. I'm like, oh, okay. I'm like, not to disregard that attribute at all, but I just thought it was funny for both of them that starts out like this. But yeah, I mean, I love these kind of cult movies, and then the fact that this one, it feels like it might be set up kind of standard, but the fact that there's vampires involved with the cult stuff, it feels like almost like, you know, a hybrid, and lots going on here. And I had lots of fun with it. I kind of like the twists and turns in the story. I think both the twins did really well in their roles. And I love how I've noticed in like a lot of Hammer movies, this one include, like, these movies do not really like to have epilogues, right? It's like the story unfolds, you get your showdown at the end, and then, like, pretty much as the creature or the monster is killed, the credits roll. There's no, like, how, like, a lot of movies, like, after that happens, and it's like we get, like, our final happy scene with, like, the main characters celebrating or moving on with their lives. It's like, nope, you're dead, you're decomposing, and credits start rolling. So always good to kick out of that, because it seems like a formula followed a lot with Hammer. But yeah, I like most all the characters in this movie. I thought it was really well done. I thought the story was really engaging, and I like seeing everything unfold. And yeah, Twins, this really would have fit in well with the episode of No More When We Recorded. What was it? Not this, not the most recent one, but the one before that, when we did.
Oh, we did Race of the Devil and the Blood on the Satan's Claw, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That would have fit in on that episode, too, because it kind of has similar stuff about it. But yeah, Twins of Evil, another first-time watch for me, but I highly recommend this one. If you're into these types of movies, I would point you in this direction for sure.
Yeah. Matt, what did you think about this one, man?
This one was also a first-time watch for me, and I enjoyed it. My wife and I sat down to watch it. Starts off with a whole witch-burning thing, and later on we get into vampires. I'm like, all right, we're going to do a whole switcheroo. And we got a whole combination of witch hunting and vampire hunting. And, of course, the two twins were extraordinary hot in this. I was looking them up during watching this. I'm going, ooh, all right. I like some of the plot, too, like some of the story. Like, I knew certain things were going to happen, and it happened, and I'm, like, hoping, well, let's hope it fixes itself, and it does. So I definitely enjoyed it. The story really stuck to me and kept me interested to the whole entire point of it. Definitely enjoyed it. I had a good time with this one.
Yeah, the thing I like about the story, too, in this one is, like, fucking, you know, I like that you have David Warbeck representing, like, the, you know, the rightness of this. I mean, he's, like, looking at it a scientific way. We have Peter Cushing, like, the old Brimstone character, mm-hmm. looking like Bible Belton, you know, who, like, later on in the movie, like, he's about to fucking clock the other sister, you know, like, with a belt, like, what the fuck? You know? He's a fucking piece of shit in this movie. It's great. He's like, he's Grand Moff Tarkin before Star Wars. Yeah, it's fucking great. But, Dubby, what did you think of this one, man?
I mean, yeah, to second that, I mean, that's definitely one of the best things about this film is just seeing Peter Cushing in such a different role and doing it so damn well, too, to boot. You know, he touched on the Witchfinder thing, and it's cool. Kind of underlying thing is it's more of a Satanism and black magic is what they're hunting for. And then, you know, that all kind of ties into the vampires and being a superstition, and it's just kind of cool how they tie in the mythos on this, and it being a later Hammer film, at least the original run of Hammer, it's cool to always see it, them kind of pushing the limits, being a little more sleazy, a little more violent and risque too, so that's always a plus in these.
Yeah.
Twins of Evil, man, it's a classic, man. I would have to put it in my top 10, top 5 kind of list for sure as far as Hammer films.
Yeah, and, you know, John Hoag's, like, one of my favorite directors. Like, the films I named I can watch those all the time. Legend of Hill House is one of my favorite ghost movies.
It is really one of the best.
The Incubus is the only movie about a penis monster raping women. You know, it's great, and it, you know, it's classy though, because it has like John Cassavetes in it. You know, it's weird, and Bruce Dickinson from Iron Maiden's in that movie. If you didn't know that, Mike, we have to do that one on the show sometime. Like,
I did not know that.
We gotta do that one sometime. We definitely do.
That's the shit.
But yeah, it's fucking awesome, and you know, I even kind of like his wallowing. It's not. Because it's supposed to be like the original novel, so it's like a different take of like the first movie.
I need to go back and watch that one.
Yeah, it's all right if you just watch it out. Don't watch it with like the other ones. Just right. Watch it on itself. I would never like. Don't do like the 22 shots, dude. Marathon for 7 Halloween movies.
Because there is no continuity,
and you want to kill yourself after. Well, actually, part 2, it does have continuity, but that's a different movie, y'all. But, anyways. Yeah, I think this movie's, you know, the scene that always gets me with this movie, especially because if I haven't watched this one in a while, is the scene is so gnarly. You know, you see Peter Cushing all sincere for 1 second, like, so, if you have to cut her head off to make her go back to heaven, right? He's talking to David Warbeck after. And, you know, he's like, yes, that's the only thing that could save her soul. 5 seconds after, fucking Frieda walks out of that door, bam! Fucking gets her head fucking jumped off.
Yeah.
Fucking yep. Amazing. Fucking greatest scene in the movie. Mike, didn't that shock you? You weren't expecting that, were you?
No. I was not.
Like,
definitely enjoyed that decapitation.
No hesitation at all. It was like, bam.
Fuck you, bitch. Whack. Done. You're free.
Fucking, yeah, that guy gives no shit about blood. He's like, fuck that. But then he gets an axe on his back after he does that. Oh, yeah. And, you know, I compare Hammer movies to, like, Shaw Brothers movies, you know, because they always end like that, too. Which is kind of weird.
Yeah.
Because they actually did a movie together, Legend of the Seven Golden Vampires, which is amazing, because it has Danny Lee and Peter Cushing in the same movie.
Yeah.
Kung Fu and Vampires, who would have thought? Yeah, this movie's fucking awesome. I highly recommend this movie. Pick up the Synapse Blu-ray. It has like an hour and a half documentary on like the state of Hammer at that time, and you know, like a lot of the historians that you hear and like a lot of these Hammer Blu-rays we've been talking about. Synapse and the Scream Factory done a terrific job on these releases. For sure.
Always the best transfer.
It was worth it.
Yeah, the transfer is amazing on this Blu-ray too. Like the thing with Synapse is a lot, I know they take a while to come out, but once you get that like Blu-ray in, you're like, okay, this was worth the wait because it looks fucking amazing. you know, like the Kindred, when it does finally come out, man, I know me and Matt have been waiting on that one for a while. That shit's going to look pristine. It's shit.
I can't wait.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But that also shows that they care. They care about film and the way film look. So, because some of these, like, I won't lie, some Scream Factory Blu-rays that I get, some of them look better than others. I'm gonna admit that to people. It's true. Like some of those double features, they look like fucking the DVD.
Like when they released Dog Soldiers, the picture quality is not the greatest, but supposedly the director wanted it to look that way. Okay.
Yeah. But now we're getting a 4K transfer of Dog Soldiers in the UK.
Yep.
Guess who's buying that? Guess who's double dipping on Dog Soldiers? Just saying. But whatever. But yeah. Everyone got anything else they want to say about the movie before ratings?
Yeah.
Nah, man.
Let's start with Matt. Matt, go on.
Okay. Again, this was a first time watch, and I definitely dug it. I dug the storyline. and kind of, I thought it was confusing at first because we're doing the whole witch burning thing and the whole burning of the witch trials and Satanism and all that, but then all of a sudden we turn around and now we have a vampire in the mix. And how the sisters are, one goes toward the dark side, pretty much. She wants the glory, she wants the castle, she wants this and that, and will do anything for it. And of course, she becomes a vampire. And she doesn't care if she screws over her own sister. It's like, wow, you're a bitch. But overall, I had a great time with it. It was a lot of fun. I give this one an 8 out of 10 as well.
Nice. Debbie.
Very nice, man. So, yeah, it's cool just seeing the dynamic of the twins. I think they did a pretty decent job as far as probably not having much acting history. I think that they did a passable performance. Of course, they were very easy on the eyes. It probably didn't hurt, but, you know. But like I said, I just like the kind of vulgarity of this one as far as, I mean, it's not over the top, but just for a Hammer film, it's cool seeing decapitations and burnings and get a little nudity in this. And so it's really cool, man, to see how the... I think this is one of their really last good rides as far as towards the end of their run. Man, great flick. I'm going about the same, though. I'm 8 out of 10 on this one as well.
Michael.
Yeah, I don't want to sound like I'm just repeating what everyone else says, but I'm upticking my rating on this one a little bit to go with an 8. This movie really has everything I like about Hammer and cult stuff. I'm a sucker for, like, whether it's like witch cults, devil cults. I like cult movies in general. I'm always intrigued by, like, what... Yeah, I'm always interested and intrigued when they can craft a story where you get, like, reasoning behind, like, why someone might want to join it in this, you know, whether it's power or, you know, leaving a certain life behind that they feel is repressive on them. You know, a lot of witch cults or devil cults in this era, a lot of it has to do with, like patriarch issues, women leading that. There's a lot of subtext or metaphors. This one, I don't know so much. It just seems like a cool Hammer flick. It didn't seem like they were going for too much stuff. I could be wrong, though. I mean, maybe, you know, multiple watches, I'll pick up more on that stuff. But with all that said, this one, they throw a vampire into the mix. So it's like the movie's already speaking my language going into it. And then, hey, there's also a vampire. So... Yeah, first time watch, but man, this left an impression. This is definitely one I want to revisit soon, so I'm going 8 out of 10.
Nice.
Also, too, you get a little necromancy in this as well, because he resurrects the dead woman, because he wasn't a vampire at first, and he resurrects her somehow through a blood cult. Like, he was into Satanism and everything, and he wanted... that fake occultists were there. I thought that was pretty cool. Then, of course, he actually does get the girl to come back from the dead. He has sex with her, and, of course, she turns him into a vampire. I thought that was pretty interesting that they added that into the mix as well.
Yeah. If you read more into, like, the Carmilla story, I think a little bit more of that plot line would make sense, because the Carmilla vampire story is... pretty involved, you know. If you watch, like, The Vampire Lovers, Ingrid Pitt plays Carmilla in that, and that's who that character is supposed to be, that he actually resurrects.
Mm.
She always changes her name whenever she comes back, but, you know, it's a cool aspect to that. You know, it's like, oh, you're now this person. You know, it's weird, but I like that aspect of, like, actually, Lust of the Vampire is pretty bad. That's actually one of the worst Hammer movies, and that's the second of this trilogy. But anyways, there's no mistaking, this is one of my favorite Hammer movies, because I picked it. I love this movie. It has everything that I like about these type of, especially like these early 70s Hammer movies. Everything that I like about them is their, the ways that they go in their story, And they add the sleaze element to them, you know, like later on you get a Vampire Circus where they have like a leopard lady, which another classic. We're going to cover that sometime. Love me some Vampire Circus. Yeah, this one, I might be going a little bit higher than you guys, but that's because I love this movie with passion. Plus it has Peter Cushing in one of his finest roles. I'm going to be like a 8.5 out of 10. Not too much higher, but you know, it could go up to a 9 if I'm being serious, because I really do love, and to give a perspective of Peter Cushing's performance in this movie, his wife was dying at the time of cancer when he was making this.
That's crazy, man.
Yeah. And the movie he did after this, after his wife died, was Horror Express. So, yeah. Two great different performances back-to-back for a typical time period in his life. And, yeah, this is a great movie. Great. I highly recommend this one. Especially if you're not a... if you want to get into Hammer, this is a great gateway Hammer movie. You know, especially if you like that sleaze element. You know, it is like a period sentence. Don't let that turn you off, because, you know, it has a lot of things going for it with, like, the witch finding shit. If you like that shit, it's got it. Vampires. If you like, want to see one of the greatest decapitation scenes ever in a movie, you gotta watch this movie just for that.
I think it's the best paced movie we watched out of the three, too. It flew by for me the most, too.
Because it had titties.
I mean, yeah, I guess it's most engaging.
I think it's the most consistent throughout. Like, it doesn't lull very much.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely a good one. And, you can go back to, like, the early stuff, too, you know. Especially, like, yeah, you know, I kind of disagree with some people. Like, we'll start them off with the classics. No, you got to get them off into some high-octane Hammer before you get them into, like, some of, like, the slower-paced stuff, I say. It's the way I always go with it. Like, you know, like, the first Dracula, yeah, you can watch it, but unless you watch, like, 75 Dracula movies, it might not hit you the same way as it did maybe me, which was one of my first Dracula movies. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think you have to find, like, the movies in some of these genres that can be appealing to a wider audience to kind of bring them in, give them kind of, like, a taste of what that genre is all about before you hit them with, like, some of the bigger classics.
You know, it's actually a very good gateway Hammer movie, and it's kind of from like their early like days, is The Gorgon, because it's a different like take on something that you never see them do. Like, it's not a vampire movie, it's not a Frankenstein movie, it's about like a mythical creature, you know. And I think it plays well into the type of like formula that usually is with these movies, because of the mystery element, who is the actual Gorgon, you know. I kind of like that aspect of that one. And, you know, and then you get more into the vampire shit after. The Gorgon's actually a really great gateway Hammer movie. Actually, I think it was going to be W's original pick, if I could be mistaken.
Yeah, man, I was definitely thinking on that one, because that was another one. I was looking for something early, but like I said, not too generic as far as a Dracula pick. As much as I do love some Cushing and Christopher Lee shit, though,
sure.
You could go 72 AD, which is a weird psychedelic vampire flick that, you know, is another end of the spectrum from the normal vampire period piece feel they have, you know.
Speaking of bulging titties, Carolyn Monroe's in that movie. One of my favorites.
That movie's so of its time. It's just funny to me.
Well, you could just watch, if you want a movie that you're like, how did this happen? Seven of the Golden Vampires.
Oh, like, yeah, there you go.
That's a thing. But I think we're done with the Hammer. I'm glad you guys enjoyed the movies. I'm glad I enjoyed the movies. It's a great time. Mike, thank you for coming on.
Thank you.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, cool. Thank you for coming on.
Well, I mean, what are the chances that three out of three movies will hit, but they all did?
That's because Derek isn't, well, I can't say that. Everyone picked good movies here today for you to watch. It's usually me saying, yeah, I picked good movies for you, Michael. It's not like I picked... I'm having flashbacks to Without Warning.
That was like, yeah, but even that I could find like the humor and fun in.
Yeah. Yeah. Without Warning's awesome. Fuck off. No, I'm just kidding.
there's many ways a movie can be entertaining, even when it's not necessarily good. And at least that one had some of those aspects.
It had Jack Palance screaming alien. Yeah. You used that in the intro to that show. Oh, alien. But anyways, guys, thanks, Mike, for coming on. You know, we're definitely going to think of something maybe less horror-oriented for you in the future. You know, it's getting the Halloween season, of course, though, so, you know, we're going to have a few other horror shows planned. But if you think of any show ideas you want to... Actually, tell you what. You think of a show that you want to do, pick the movies, and we'll make it happen. How's that sound?
Sounds good. There's a lot of movies out there to choose from, but I'll figure something out.
Yep. And in that queue, we actually have a few Halloween shows maybe planned. We're going to try for two. But we'll see how the schedules are going. But, yeah, that's it for us. We're out. Thank you, everyone, for subscribing. Check us out on the New Dark Discussions Network. I'll send you the link to add to the show notes for that, Dub. And, you know, just check us out on the Facebook group page, as usual, Cinema Attack /Celluloid Dissections, where we don't talk about just horror movies. We don't talk about just Hammer movies. We talk about every movie. And the only way that I could think of to leave us off with is a song by the immortal Queen, Hammer to Fall. So we're out of here. Peace.
Peace.
Later.